Welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. This weekend's episode focuses on eco-friendly gardening and farming. You'll hear from Joanne Gordon, Granny Organic, and Amanda Pastoria of the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market. Before we begin the interviews, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement. It's important to remember the historical context of the place in which we live. Indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Malala, and others, lived on and tended this land prior to European settlement and were displaced against their will. Beginning in this way helps us to come from a place of humbleness and respect as we dive into any topic we wish to engage in dialogue about. Theirs is part of the story of this place. I'm talking with Joanne Gordon, also known as Granny Organic to some, who's here to discuss sustainable gardening and farming. What is sustainable farming? What does it mean to be sustainable in the ecological sense?
Well, to me, it means using organic fertilizers and soil amendments so that you don't deplete the soil. You actually feed the soil microorganisms and the beneficial microbes and things, and also using safe pesticides, but not using too many. You still, even if it's non-toxic, you need to be careful and not overkill, because you can kill good bugs along with bad bugs with even non-toxic pesticides. And trying to monitor water, you know, not overuse your water, and composting and using manures as much as possible, things like that.
Awesome. You kind of covered this a little bit, but what are the benefits of going organic or being organic as opposed to using more chemicals, whether it's fertilizers or pesticides or that kind of thing?
Well, probably the biggest benefit is to the soil, because when you use synthetic fertilizers, you don't feed the microorganisms and they die. You can even kill the earthworms with synthetic fertilizers. So that, and you don't have to apply organic fertilizers as often because they stay in the soil longer while they get broken down and get utilized by the plants. And the microorganisms make the nutrients in the organic fertilizers available to the plant. So, and you keep the mycorrhizae alive, all that fungi that we're starting to learn more and more about, the rich fungi mushrooms, you know, it's really important in your soil.
Yeah, there are a lot of interconnections that I think people are newly becoming aware of. I mean, some people knew about them, but they're becoming more widely known, I guess. Back in Vermont, when I was doing Eco AmeriCorps, I was helping in a native plant nursery, a native tree nursery that was getting established. And we were kind of trying out some different, you know, types of soil or different soil amendments, including mycelium from the local forest, because we wanted to keep things as local as possible and just kind of, you know, playing around a little bit with that and experimenting to see what would help the seedlings and then the trees later grow better. Yeah, and there are a lot of those interconnections that it's good to be aware of them and to be open to, maybe there's something we didn't realize before.
Well, they're really coming out with a lot more information on all of that than when I first started gardening over 30 years ago. We didn't know all those little details. And believe it or not, I think the cannabis industry has really expanded the understanding of nutrients in the soil for everybody. You know, we worked on a small farm and the farmer had been educated and got a degree in biochemistry and he really understood soils. But most of us, just backyard gardeners, you know, we just read the package and did our best. But he understood what was going on and you know, he claims that he grew and sold his red bell peppers so that he could feed the microorganisms in his soil. That was what he did.
Yeah, no, that's neat though. But it's interesting to think about where we learn things from. You know, I've been reading about indigenous knowledge, you know, Native American indigenous people, and just some of the traditional ecological knowledge that has come from different groups, as well as from scientists. You know, so there's different people who have these stores of knowledge or are learning these different things. And I think if we can, you know, as a human species too, kind of interconnect and share that knowledge, then it'll benefit the whole as well. You mentioned worm composting, which I'm particularly interested in, as I used to do a little bit of vermiculture in the classroom when I was a science teacher. Can you share a little bit more about your experience with worm composting?
Well, worm composting is one thing. It's a great way to get rid of a lot of your table scraps, you know, your vegetable peels and leftover things. It's not a good idea to use meat or fatty things in the worm bin. But the resulting worm castings are just, they're the best manure. And then the liquid that drips down off of them can be used, you know, as a liquid fertilizer also, which is great in houseplants because I've used fish fertilizer in houseplants and it's a little sticky. So, you know, that's great outside, but it gets overwhelming in the house. And you don't have to be super scientific about the worm thing. You can just kind of let it go, learn the basics, and then do it. And they multiply. And then you use just a little bit of the castings in your potting soil, or you can side dress your vegetable plant with it. And I learned many years ago, the smaller the organism, the better the manure. So now I'm seeing even companies are selling frass from X because they're raising things like mealworms and everything poops. and they're using that insect frass. Worms are great. But I bought some red wigglers. Wrigglers, W-R or W-I, I don't know. So I use those in my bin. And then they multiply, and I've shared them with other people. And they're the best because they stay close to the surface in the soil. If you go dig the earthworms out in the garden, those are usually down about 2 feet. And so they, you know, they're really good to have down there, but they don't digest as much material. The red wigglers just eat things up.
Yeah, that's what we used in the classroom too. We had kind of a double lined bin system. And when I first was asking the principal if I could do a compost bin, she was like, is it going to smell? And so we played around with it actually. We had, you know, there were like two totes basically, an outer tote, inner tote. We had to have air holes and things. And we found that if we put anything too wet, it did get stinky, right? So if you have like watermelon rinds or lettuce, those are the things that I ended up telling the students they couldn't put those in because they smelled really bad. But, you know, once we got the kind of a good ratio of kind of wet material, dry material, you know, some non-bleached cardboard, some leaves, different things that were dry. We found that it didn't smell. You know, we had it next to my desk and it wasn't a problem at all. And, you know, students could, if they ate an apple, they could put the core in there and it wasn't going to the landfill anymore.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You know, there's a vermicomposting business in Roseburg. They got some grant money, but I haven't seen them really launch the whole business yet. They're with the Veterans Association. Yeah, I'm excited they're doing that. We used to sell bags of worm castings at our garden center, and we got them from Canada. They were the best that we could find. There are different companies selling the castings and lots of different people doing it different ways, but that product, it was just, it's great.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I'll have to check them out. So you mentioned that you had a business that I understand that you started out kind of selling produce, flowers, plants, and things at farmers markets and then kind of grew or expanded that to be a garden center. Can you kind of explain a little bit about how that grew, how your business grew? gardening pun, I guess.
We started very small and then moved to a smaller place. And so we realized we didn't have a large enough place to grow produce. We have had like much less than an acre of plantable area. So we started doing cut flowers because you can cut them and they just make more flowers and they just keep going. And bedding plants, everything from, you know, petunias to zucchini. So we did that and we sold at our place out on the Tilly Trail Highway, and we sold at farmers markets. So then the highway in front of our house got expanded. We had 2 summers that people had to go through roadblocks to get here. So customers stopped driving out to us. And we were getting older and loading a pickup truck and driving it 70 miles to a farmer's market started getting a little tiring. So we started looking at options, and we realized also we had no retirement plan, and we were in our late 40s, and all we had to sell as far as a business was a pickup truck and a business plan for selling at markets. So we looked at Canyonville, and there was no place to buy bedding plants in Canyonville. So we opened a small seasonal plant stand. We were only open for about 3 months. And that was well received, and it grew to a different location, a larger area. And we sold more, and we were open year-round. And then a building became available, and we expanded into that. And we were able to sell every kind of organic fertilizer and non-toxic pesticides and seeds. And we even had a gift shop with fairy garden things and lots of different soil amendments. And we specialized in organics or sustainable products. At first, we refused to even sell Miracle-Gro fertilizer. And then I had too many people just walk away when they came in. I asked what they were looking for, and they asked for Miracle-Gro. And instead of losing them completely, I started selling it. And so I was able to show them that they could buy that or introduce them to organic products. And Down to Earth Distributors produces a wonderful small booklet that explains in short articles the benefits of different organic fertilizers and what they do for the plants. So I could hand them one of those and say, you know, here you go. If you want to think about switching to organic, come on in. And at first, we would really have to explain everything to the customers. And then after a couple of years, they would come in and just pick things up off the shelf. They had figured it out. And it was really satisfying. We were able to sell a lot of good organic fertilizers. And we also sold compost tea. It's an aerated tea product. You take compost and worm castings and kind of put it in a big tea bag in a container, and it aerates, so the water is moved around, and that makes the beneficial organisms grow also. If they have more oxygen, the beneficials grow.
We'll be right back after a few brief announcements. Is there an environmentally related issue you'd like to solve? Perhaps you're passionate about recycling, waste management, clean water, protection of old growth forests, wildlife rescue, reducing cat or dog overpopulation, picking up litter, or organic farming. If you're interested in exploring one of these solutions or have an idea for another way to solve a local problem, be sure to sign up for the Eco Innovations Challenge. You'll have a chance to gain financial and volunteer support to put your plan into action. Contact Ryan at umpquawatersheds.org to learn more. You're listening to an episode of Living Downstream on KQUA, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds.
Yeah, it's always rewarding to see someone. It's like, you know, people don't have to take the advice the first time necessarily, but to see people learn and to, you know, change their perspective, be open to changing their perspective over time to something that is more beneficial for the environment or for other people or that kind of thing. So right. That's great.
We were also able to do gardening classes. So I always did a beginning gardening class, and my husband would do a starting seeds and taking cuttings and do a hands-on class with people with that. And yeah, these things were really well received in the community. It was fun. But we got old. So we sold the business.
Just older, not old.
Older.
So what are you doing now that you're not doing that business anymore? Do you have a garden at home? Like, are you still outside being active with planting?
We still have a very large garden, and we grow everything from dried beans, you know, to make bean soup, and pretty much all of our own produce. We even grow through the winter. There's a few things in the garden that won't freeze. Most of the greens, like kale and Swiss chard. And we also have some trays of baby lettuces and pea shoots. And I just planted sunflowers for sunflower shoots. And then we freeze tomatoes and a lot of produce. We grow all our potatoes, all our onions, all our garlic. So yes, we're still gardening. And we plant a lot of flowers. My husband, when we first started doing the garden, he said, well, flowers are okay, but, you know, we're going to focus on vegetables. And somebody came and asked if they could buy a bouquet. So it started making us money. And he has fallen in love with flowers. He starts hundreds of petunias and pansies and different things from seed all year round. We have pansies right now blooming in hanging baskets all around the house. It's his passion. It really is. And it also, the flowers provide nectar and pollen for the bees and for the hummingbirds. We have hummingbirds like crazy. I feed them, you know, hummingbird food, but they also go to the flowers. So we have lots of ornamentals planted. Did you know hummingbirds like eucalyptus flowers? I did not know that. I learned that this year.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I'm rather partial to hummingbirds myself. And so I was very excited when, you know, sometimes I'll be sitting outside on the porch and a little hummingbird, yeah, either will hear them or see them flying around, which is very cool. Because, yeah, you would not see hummingbirds back in New York February. So.
But you have to feed them if you want to keep them here in the winter. So.
Yeah, we have where I'm staying, there are some apple trees, and actually just the last few apples are falling, but they've kind of lingered. And so I'll see the hummingbirds go up to the old apples because there's still a little bit of like juice in them, I guess.
Great. Okay, nice.
What advice would you give to someone who might, you know, be interested in starting a garden?
Well, the first thing I would say is to, you know, start reading. People think that they can just start doing it without any knowledge. Just do it. And you can get a lot of information from seed packs, especially this one company, Botanical Interests. Their seed packs are covered with information, even on the inside. You open the seed pack and there's more information on the inside. They're really helpful. I discovered them just a few years ago. And the Territorial Seed Catalog is very helpful. It has a section on every kind of vegetable, which will tell, you know, some basic information about how to grow it, how to fertilize, a little bit about harvest and pests. So that catalog's really helpful in that. And since it's a Pacific Northwest catalog, it's friendly to our area. And then start small, especially if you're just a backyard gardener. Don't think you're going to grow, you know, a half-acre garden. It's just not feasible. Perhaps even go help a farmer if you can. Go get a job on a farm. If you don't want to really farm, that you might not need to do that. You just want to be a back, you know, grow your own produce. And talk to the farmers at the farmers markets. They're always full of information and pay attention to what varieties they grow. I'm really connected to books. I know all the generation now does everything with their phone and they Google everything. But to really find quickly the information you need to have when you're standing in the middle of the garden with your shovel in your hand, a book can be really helpful. They can tell you how far apart to plant your plants and how deep to plant the seeds. And the seed catalogs are really full of information. So read and keep a journal. That's the other thing. I made that in big print. Keep a journal. You will not remember, I can guarantee, from personal experience and learning from my mistakes, I do not remember. So write down when you plant things, what you planted, and where you planted it. And then write down about the harvest also. My very first garden I planted, I realized, you know, about 2 months in, I went, well, how do I even know this stuff is ready to eat? What now? What do I do? So I had to go find, you know, the book to tell me. Back then, they didn't have internet. A book to tell me when to harvest things and how to tell it was ripe. So, you know, write it down, like the dates that you harvest things so you can kind of get a sense. Keep a journal. And be ready to learn from your mistakes. Don't feel bad when you plant something and things go bad. It just doesn't work. It, you know, you learn from it.
I think that's some good advice for life. Actually, life advice I've been trying to live by myself. You know, if you make mistakes, look at them as a learning opportunity. And I think that's, you know, of the utmost importance in the garden, because, you know, you never know if maybe 1 year you're going to have some sort of animal come through and eat something, or maybe, you know, there's more rain or less rain, or, you know, there's all sorts of factors that can influence the garden. So I like the idea of journaling and writing it down and, yeah, being willing to learn, make some changes.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I'm seeing it being recognized that we learn from our mistakes. I've believed that for most of my life, but I'm still afraid to try things because it might not work. And that's how you become successful.
Yeah, I think our culture is kind of attached to this idea of being perfect on the first try or being a natural at something, you know? And yeah, sometimes I don't know. Like, I mean, it's nice when you're able to just do it and get it right. But there's a lot we don't know and we can't know, you know, as a first timer trying something. So that's a good point.
People are surprised at how much I know, but I've been doing this full time for 30 years. And I've been reading, you know, and learning. And when we first opened our garden center in Canyonville, we mostly sold bedding plants and perennial flowers. And then I had to learn about shrubs, and I knew nothing about ornamental shrubs. So I went to big wholesale nurseries and looked at things, and I carried about a 10-pound book around to read about the things, because they didn't have information. They just had a name. And usually it was the Latin name. I didn't know what that was. And it did. The one thing is, it kind of came natural to me to remember flower names. I can't remember people names, but I can remember flower names. So, yeah, and it's just grown and grown literally to be a passion.
Yeah, I also appreciated your advice about reading, you know, learning about something before we attempt it the first time. Having been a teacher, I am always, you know, a big supporter of education and learning about something. But, you know, I've been really trying to encourage others and practice myself, you know, informed decision making. So before I get, you know, before I get a new type of pet, okay, I'm going to read about it. Like, do I really want to get a hedgehog? And, you know, I don't know about this. Or do I, maybe I should get something that's a little more familiar to me. So yeah, no, it's really important to get to know something, know, you know, what we're trying to start exploring, you know. I mean, it's good to explore and just kind of get to know it, but that's part of the process of exploring, I think, is reading, learning, you know, asking experts, asking people who do know, and then just trying it ourselves and going from there.
Right. Yeah.
So speaking of learning, like, what are a couple of maybe interesting things that you've learned or important lessons, gardening lessons that you've learned?
Well, I've learned an important one is soil temperature when you're starting seeds. Certain plants have to have soil at different temperatures. Like tomatoes and peppers, the soil needs to be 65 or 70 degrees before they will sprout. And I guess as part of that, learning that all plant categories have different needs and you have to figure those out. They have different soil requirements and watering and not just the fertilizers, and also how much sunlight do they need. I think I've learned that I can't stop learning. I just learned about cedar trees the other day from the Master Gardeners in the newspaper. And there's always something new to learn.
I think that's probably the comment I've heard the most from people I've had on the show, is that we never stop learning. There's always more to learn. So thank you for reiterating that point, because it's so important. Yeah, I guess before we go, what might you say to someone who's listening and thinking, yeah, you know, organic sounds nice, you know, being sustainable sounds nice, but I don't have the time or the money, or it sounds too difficult or something like that?
Well, first of all, it's not that difficult. You get an all-purpose organic fertilizer and read the instructions on the bag or the box and use it. Some people will have the perception that it's more expensive, because a box of organic fertilizer might cost more than a synthetic fertilizer, but you don't have to put it on as often. Organic fertilizers stay in the soil better, and they don't pollute the groundwater the way synthetics do. In fact, people with lawns are some of the biggest water polluters in our country, because they're constantly putting synthetic fertilizer and herbicide on their lawns, and that leaches down into the groundwater. Organic fertilizer, you can put on every 2 or 3 months. So it saves time, actually. You just use it when you plant and forget about it, depending on the plant's needs, of course. So it's not as expensive or time consuming. And especially after you get your soil built up, then, you know, if your soil's been depleted by the use of synthetic fertilizers, it might take a couple of years to get, you know, a really good ground soil. I would recommend to people to stay away from topsoil at a soil supply place. You know, like if you're going to the Douglas County Co-op to buy a yard of soil, topsoil is probably the worst thing you could get. You need garden loam, garden bed soil. I'm a big believer in lots and lots of manure, but that's a little more backbreaking. Sometimes if you have access to manure, use it. Use a lot of it. Horse manure has more weed seeds. Chicken manure is more high in nitrogen, but there aren't too many chicken farms in the area.
I used to take my students to a local garden, kind of a community garden. They supplied fresh produce to like a lunch program, like low income lunch program type of thing. And I really got to know some different gardening practices from the woman that we volunteered with a lot. And she actually would get, I think, was it bat guano or something? Like, you know, because like you said, everybody poops and there are certain nutrients in that poop, essentially. So
right.
Good to know.
And actually, rabbit manure is probably the best. And goat manure is really good. But those aren't readily available. So we have found the most economical fertilizer is a dehydrated chicken manure. And it's not available in a lot of places, but it's most economical and easiest to use. It comes in a big bag.
Well, thank you for all the insights that you've shared. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience before we go?
No, I don't think so. Just don't be afraid of failure and give it a try. Even if you just grow a tomato plant in a big container, at least you'll have some fresh tomatoes or lettuce. It's easy to grow a little salad garden and have fun.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Everybody, my name is is Mimi, and I am an AmeriCorps service member serving as the school garden coordinator for Umpqua Valley Farm to School in partnership with the Blue Zones Project. Umpqua Valley Farm to School is a local nonprofit organization centered on connecting schools with local agriculture and providing them with access to healthier ways of living and eating. We work with existing school garden programs and provide schools with resources to start new school garden programs. Umpqua Valley Farm to School uses art and science to teach youth the importance of our local food system and promote local agriculture. Our nonprofit organization was launched in 2010 as a community building and revitalization effort called Thriving Waters in Glide, Oregon. Much of this work encompassed gardening and arts at the local school and a focus on local health and well-being. Seeing great need for these efforts beyond Glide, we expanded our reach and impact in 2020 as Umpqua Valley Farm to School, and now provide garden-based education and community agricultural support throughout Douglas County. Recognizing the true need for food access and security across the county, where upwards of 60% of families rely on free and reduced lunches from schools, we help harvest and distribute hundreds of pounds of fresh farm and garden produce to families over the course of the year. At Umpqua Valley Farm to School, we believe the health of our community begins with teaching young people the importance of choosing fresh, local produce and how to grow their own in any space. At this time, 43,000 schools in all 50 states have farm-to-school programs, reaching 20 million students and spending $789 million a year on local food. And those numbers are expanding every year. People are starting to realize that farm-to-school programs benefit kids, farmers, and the community as a whole. Umpqua Valley Farm to School's website has many resources for teachers, parents, and students to use at home or in the classroom to get connected to their local food systems. Over the last couple of months, Umpqua Valley Farm to School delivered over 200 of our garden exploration kits to 2nd, 3rd, and 5th graders at Green, Fairgrove, and Winchester Elementary Schools. We developed the ideas for these kits to get kids outdoors and off their screens, especially during this time when so many students have been locked into Zoom classes. The kits included wood and nails to construct a planter box, soil, various types of seeds, watercolor paints and paper, a notebook, magnifying glass, coloring book, and an activity packet with activities that use the materials in the kit. On our website at uvf2s.org, we have each of the lessons from our kits available to be downloaded that can be easily done at home. And for many of these lessons, we have video demonstrations available as well on our website, YouTube, or Facebook page. Also on our website, we have our monthly newsletters, which include garden happenings, growing tips, recipes, and Oregon Harvest of the Month information. And we have a map of local farms and gardens in the Umpqua Valley area available as well. Something exciting we're working on right now is our farm field trip program. Typically, we would take groups of students to local farms in person for field trips, but in the last year, we've had to adapt to a virtual farm field trip format. We have videos out now and many more to come highlighting local farmers who show us around their farms and tell us about what they do. Our latest video is with Chad Northcraft of DC Modern Roots, who gives us a look at his seeding technique and shows us around his property. These field trips are available on our website, our YouTube page, and our Facebook page. Last month, we hosted a booth at the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market, where we gave away some of our garden exploration kits for a donation. And this month, we have a booth at the market again, and we'll be giving away Mason bee boxes to support our local bee populations. We'll have kits to put together at home or already constructed boxes available again for a donation price of your choosing. We'll also be giving away packets of seeds as well as more information about our organization and how we can connect with you. If you're interested in volunteering with Umpqua Valley Farm to School, there's always work to be done when it comes to gardening, so you're welcome to visit the volunteer page of our website, uvf2s.org, and fill out our form or just read more about what we do. We hope to see you around our community at local events, schools, or just at the market. Thanks for listening.
Hello everyone, my name is Xenia Lederman. I am an AmeriCorps serving with UC Veg and Blue Zones Project as Community Garden Coordinator. So part of what my job entails is getting the community gardens in Roseburg to a better and more sustainable place in the future. So I work to support three community gardens, and those are Gateway Community Garden, which is located in downtown Roseburg, right next to the Senior Center. The second one is Umpqua Dairy Community Garden, and that one is located about 2 blocks away behind Umpqua Dairy. And then the third one is Westside Community Garden, and that one is located next to First United Methodist Church of Roseburg, behind where the farmers market is on Saturdays. So you might see it, you might have seen it then. If not, go check it out. But so this work means supporting them in a number of ways. Partly physically getting them to a better place, so doing weeding, adding more beds, adding a compost, getting them cleaned up, having work parties, things along that line. And the second one is filling the garden beds. And so right now that is what we're focused a lot on because happy spring, it's planting time. So I wanted to tell you about the openings we have at these gardens. At Westside Community Garden, we have 10 open spots. We have raised beds and in-ground beds. The second one is Gateway Community Garden, and we have 12 open spaces. Those are all raised beds. Some are higher than others for accessibility. Those are $25 for the year. And with that garden, we do have scholarships available for people who aren't able to pay the price for the year. And then the third one is Umpqua Dairy Community Garden, and we currently have 6 open plots there. So one of our goals is actually to have a program where schools or kids can come to the garden and garden. We are looking to restart that, and with any schools or any programs that are interested. So my email is umpquagardens@gmail.com. So if any of the things that I'm telling you about is interesting or you want to learn more or sign up, please email me and we can get something going. So filling the beds, that's one of the things that I work on that we are trying to promote to the public. The second thing is some of the events we have coming up, because those are in the garden, and we really want to kind of bring attention to the community gardens that we have here and get them into a better place for the future and get more people involved with them. The next event that we have coming up is May 1st at 1 p.m., and that is Art in the Garden, and that takes place at the Gateway Community Garden. And so that will be painting and planting in the garden. So we're going to be planting flowers, painting on the garden beds, painting some crafts and decorations for the garden. We will have snacks and free seeds and free seed starter kits. And so we really want to target kids for this event. Obviously, we want all members of the community to join us, but we would love to get kids involved. This is a very kid-friendly event and a great way to kind of introduce them to the garden and get them interested in it. So mark your calendars for that one. The second one is a bed building event, and so that is at Westside Community Garden on May 22nd at 1:30 p.m., and food will be provided. So we are rebuilding 2 of the garden beds there that have kind of just deteriorated over time, and we're trying to rebuild those so we'll have more beds available for people who want to garden. So another thing that I help organize are monthly garden workshops. So these are really targeted for people who are just beginning to garden or just want to learn more garden techniques, get kind of some information about how to get started and make the most of their gardens. So a lot of these are held by OSU Master Gardeners. Right now, we've had a handful of virtual workshops due to COVID and some of the regulations. However, we have had in-person events in the past, in-person workshops in the past, and we plan to again in the future. So those are a great way to get started with gardening if you are a little timid or if people just need more information about how to garden in this area and make the most of your space. So yeah, those are some of the exciting things that we have coming up that we are looking forward to and would love other members of the community to be involved in. We're always looking for volunteers, whether it be for these events or just to help out in the garden. That can be anything from pulling weeds to lawn mowing to helping plant some new things there. And a lot of these volunteer events can count for community service hours in case any of the students need those for any classes or clubs. All of these can count. Also, for more information, you can visit the garden Facebook pages. Those are at Service Gardens and at WSC Garden for the Westside Community Garden and Service Gardens. Also, the UC Veg Facebook page has all of the events that we're working on. We would love to work with you guys, and if any of this interests you, please send me an email and we can get connected and figure out a way that all of us can work together.
Now back to Living Downstream, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds. Our next interviewee is Amanda Pastoria, market manager for the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market.
I'm wondering, when did the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market get its start?
The market got started 27 years ago, in 1994, and it was started by a group of women and men who just finished their Master Gardeners program, and they all got together and wanted to start a farmer's market, and they all pitched in $50 a piece to like buy signage and do a little advertising in the newspaper, and it got started that way. Some of those vendors are actually still at the farmer's market.
Oh, awesome. Some long-term people.
some lovers of food, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking of, it was in a Margaret Mead said a quote, never underestimate the power of a group of committed citizens or something like that. You know, when people can come together for good and get something great started.
Absolutely. And you need a farmer three times a day. So good stuff.
That's very true. What types of produce do the farmers grow, and what kinds of natural items do crafters make and offer at the market?
Oh, my goodness. So the amount of produce that we can grow here in Douglas County is pretty amazing. We have such a mild climate that, I mean, we can grow everything from greens to, you know, kind of exotic types of radishes and carrots and beets. And then, of course, we have an amazing fruit harvest when the apples and peaches and cherries and blueberries and all of those things come on. Really, there's not much that we can't grow here aside from your citrus fruits and, you know, your tropical things like avocados and mangoes and whatnot. However, we do have two vendors who have citrus greenhouses. So we are lucky enough to even get in like kefir limes and Meyer lemons, these really cool Buddha hand fruit. So, I mean, we have a super wide variety, everything that you want from potatoes to onions to strawberries to raspberries. There's a ton of variety. And then as far as our crafters, you have to make what you sell. So, I mean, we have gorgeous jewelry or beautiful artists, sewers and quilters. Goodness. I mean, everything is handmade. So everything from the food, from the baked goods to the hummus to, you know, fish has to be caught and meat has to be, you know, the livestock has to be grown by the farmers and ranchers, and everything that you find at the market is something that someone is absolutely passionate about, which is, I think, one of the coolest things. When you meet the person who grows your food, I mean, you really know the hand that feeds you, and it's super important. And you can ask about their growing practices and, you know, maybe why they started doing what they are doing. And some of them have four generations of farmers, or, you know, this may be their grandma's cinnamon roll recipe that is just to die for.
That's very cool. Yeah, I have visited the farmers market and I want to go back. I haven't gone in a little while, but it made me think about, so our first interviewee on today's episode described how she does sustainable organic farming and gardening. So you mentioned that you can talk to the, you know, the farmers about how they grow their produce. Are there some organic farmers that share the produce there?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone uses non-GMO or organic seeds, all of our farmers. We do have one that is certified organic, and many who have organic growing practices. It is just pretty expensive to get that certified organic. However, they are all willing to talk about their growing practices. So, I mean, you can always count on the food that you buy at the farmer's market to be safe, not sprayed with chemicals.
Yeah, I'm staying on a farm currently, and it's always interesting to talk with the woman that I live with about, yeah, just like how she grows things, and all she has, you know, all sorts of things so that she's kind of self-sufficient. And I think a lot of people have kind of turned that direction with COVID, you know, trying to grow your own or have your own, you know, animals that you're going to then eat. And yeah, there's definitely some, you know, knowledge is power, and it's great to know where your food is coming from. And if you're, you know, growing that food on your own land, then you really know where it's coming from.
Absolutely. And we do have some of our farmers and even some of our ranchers who are totally regenerative. I mean, everything goes back into the land. The land comes to us and everything goes back into the land. I mean, it's like a perfect circle and nothing goes to waste, which I think is something that is really cool about farming, and something that makes a big impact if everyone were to do it. I mean, and the environment needs that right now.
Yeah, that's so true. I used to teach middle school science, and I would say, you know, nature is one of the best recyclers. You know, it really puts different nutrients and things back in the system. So it's great when humans also kind of take that approach and try to put those nutrients back. And like you said, regenerative agriculture is so
great.
Yeah,
how about those animals have like the world's perfect fertilizer?
That's true. How does COVID impact operations at the farmers market?
So, you know, there's, I mean, we have had to adjust and just kind of go with the flow with all the regulations and the mandates. But, you know, for us, it was all about staying open, keeping all of these small businesses, because, I mean, we have up to 80 small businesses that sell their products and, you know, make a living at the farmers market. So, you know, we are there to have a safe environment for the community. We require masks to be worn. You know, we have hand washing stations out. We sanitize high traffic areas every hour. Our booths are spread apart a little bit to help maintain distance. We are definitely following the rules that we need to follow in order to stay open. I mean, and that for us is kind of the name of the game for the farmers market, because we are there for these small businesses, and the market is a small business incubator. And it was just about, you know, feeding our families and staying alive during COVID. And I think we are one of the few markets that have actually thrived during COVID. And it's just so beautiful to see all the community support that we have gotten and the way that this community has supported the small local businesses, not just within the farmers market, but within the community at large too.
Thank you for sharing that. There are also informational and educational booths at the farmers market as well, correct?
Yeah. Each week we do have one nonprofit booth that is available for free for community organizations. A lot of times it's the smart reading program and they're giving out books to kids, or we have the Umpqua Valley Farm to School program that's there and they're raising funds for the school gardens. We've had the Boys and Girls Club there with, you know, a raffle to win a Mini Cooper, and all of these things that will benefit the community. We allow a free booth every month for those organizations to kind of get the word out to the community to, you know, it helps them sign up volunteers. And really for us, it's all about community. So we are definitely in for things like that.
That's great. Are all of the spots signed up, you know, already taken for this year?
No, not at all. You know, if anyone wants to discuss having a booth there, they can get a hold of me through, you know, the Facebook page for the Umpqua Valley Farmers Market, or they can email me at uvfmmanager@gmail.com.
I might reach out also then for Umpqua.
Absolutely. They've been there many times.
Very cool. Yeah, we are planning a lot of programs. We haven't really done things in person. We have a couple of hikes, but we've been very COVID cautious. and so we've been having a lot of virtual events, but we have a number of events coming up in April, May, and June. So yeah, I'll reach out and
see. You are welcome to be there.
What we can do.
Are you an avid reader? Then you should join Umpqua Watershed's book club. Turning Over a New Leaf is a book club for teens and adults who are interested in learning about environmental issues and working to make positive change. We meet once a month to discuss a book or topic. Email Ryan Kincaid, the AmeriCorps member serving as Umpqua Watershed's Environmental Education and Outreach Leader, at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's ryan@umpquawatersheds.org for more information. Umpqua Watershed's annual river cleanup will take place Saturday, April 24th, and will look a little different this year. We're hoping to have people sign up in COVID exposure groups, that is, with family and friends you're already interacting with on a regular basis, to limit everyone's exposure to the virus. Each group will be assigned one location along the river and will receive materials for cleaning up litter along that stretch. If you'd like to sign up a team or are interested in learning more, please reach out to our AmeriCorps member by emailing ryan@umpquawatersheds.org, ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. We're looking forward to a great event.
Now let's wrap up our interview with Amanda.
Do you have any other interesting information that you'd like to share about the farmers market or farming in general?
Well, right now is the time where we start getting really excited because the sun is returning and the days are warming and you can hear the bees buzzing now and everything is blooming. So there's definitely a new life that happens at the market this time of year. And just, I don't know, it's like this anticipation and this excitement that happens because, well, for me, it's, I know that there's berries coming in the fruit, which is my absolute favorite. So yeah, it's just, it's a great place to spend a Saturday. We do tons of kids activities, and we also have a Food Hero program that we run throughout the summer, which is a partnership with UCAN and OSU Extension. and the farmers market, and we do recipe kits that really it's about nutrition education, but the recipe kits come with everything you need and the recipe. So you can go home and make it. And it's just a great learning tool and a nutrition education activity that you can, that everyone can do as a family. So we will get excited for that to start up, and that'll start in June. And it'll run pretty much the rest of the summer. So we have that. We also have our Double Up Food Bucks program, which benefits SNAP recipients. So you can come in and use your SNAP card. And as long as you take out at least $10 on your SNAP card, we add $10 in produce. And they can, you can do that every week. So we do have great, again, community benefit options. So, you know, and if you don't like to carry cash, we can swipe your credit card and give you tokens to spend in the market. And, you know, we keep it easy and simple. And all of our vendors take those. And, you know, we're there to share our goods and our passions with everyone in the community. And it's just a really fun place to be, especially now that live music is kicking back in. And, you know, like I said, we always have something fun for the kids.
Yeah, it sounds like a great community opportunity for everyone. I love the idea of the food kits and having the recipes and everything you need. That's great. And it's so helpful, I know, for either having the Double Up SNAP benefits. So that's just another great resource that you guys offer.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, especially through COVID and, you know, people losing their jobs and whatnot, just to have that extra money to spend on really nutritious food is so beneficial. Really makes a difference.
Yeah, for sure. I thought of another question, actually. So I didn't come in the winter time, but was the farmer's market open all, is it open all year? Like, was it open this winter as
well?
Yeah,
so we do run all year long. The only time we take off is that the weekends between Christmas and New Year. However, this year it falls on both on Saturdays. So we'll take 2 weeks off this year. But aside from that, we are open year round. We would have normally gone indoors, but because of COVID, we stayed outside. And actually, that was great for us. It really worked out better, actually, just to have that extra space. And we stayed visible along the road. And we really gained a lot of new customers this winter because of that.
That's awesome. is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I mean, just that, you know, we are there. There's always something new. I have new vendors coming on all the time. And as the seasons change, the produce changes. So there's always something fresh to get your hands on. And if you haven't been to the market, please join us. The quality is impeccable. It does taste different when it is literally picked within 24 hours of hitting the market. It lasts longer in the fridge, and just the quality and the nutrition content is maintained. So health-wise, it's a glorious benefit, and it's just fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, and we'll see you at the market.
See you at the market.
Before we go, I'd like to leave you with a song called Rainbow by Marnie Alberton.
Many colored threads of sunshine. You can smile and let it all be fine. the sun from us below. But the rainbow is hiding just behind the clouds. I know.
Many of us have struggled through the storms of the past year, but in this springtime of rebirth, I hope you can find little reasons to be joyful. Perhaps it's pea pods growing on the vine, or the sweet taste of berries, seeing a friend at the farmer's market, or seeing a rainbow in the clouds. Look for the joy, and I promise that you'll find it.